SF Signal episode 74, the first of my Worldcon interviews. This is the SF Signal Podcast, as powered by the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd, and I am back from Worldcon. I went to my very first Worldcon in Reno just a couple weekends ago, and I've been to World Fantasy before, but I had never been to Worldcon, so this was my first, and it was huge, and a little overwhelming. There was a lot of stuff going on, and it was spread out between two hotels and a convention center. So you had buses going back and forth quite a bit. Some people were a little bit frustrated with the buses, and so they were taking taxis back and forth or sharing, you know, taxi rides. But essentially, you had things going on at one hotel, some things going on at another hotel, plus your main convention stuff happening at the convention center. So you had all your panels, your book signings, the dealer's room, the art room, you name it, the coffee clatches, all that stuff going on over at the convention center. You had some readings and parties and different things going on at this hotel. You had the Hugos and some other stuff going on at that hotel. So it was really spread out, and it was kind of difficult to connect with people and know where everybody was, you know, and kind of hang out. So that was a bit of a challenge. Like I said, a lot of people were taking buses back and forth or riding in cabs, you know, and lots and lots of texting going on, just trying to find people, that kind of good stuff. I managed to get several interviews for you, and I'm going to play the first one here in this episode. And this was with Lauren Bucus. Lauren is a science fiction and fantasy author from South Africa. And she has a couple of books out right now with Angry Robot, Zoo City and Moxieland. Now, she's won, I think, a couple of awards. I know she's won the Arthur C. Clarke Award. And she was up for the British Science Fiction Award. And I believe she's nominated for the World Fantasy for this year, I think. So she's got some really cool stuff going on over at Angry Robot. And I had the opportunity to sit down and chat with her for a little bit in between panels. Just a wonderful person, very, very personable. We had a great conversation, and then I realized that I hadn't actually recorded it. So I apologized profusely and begged her to do that again. So this is the second recording with Lauren, who is infinitely patient and was horribly, horribly kind to me to repeat everything that we had already talked about a second time. Here you go, Lauren Bucus, Angry Robot, Zoo City, Moxieland. Go check it out after you listen to this interview.
I'm sitting here with Lauren Bucus. This is the second recording because I screwed up the first one. And John and Ilya's going to laugh about that. You are an author with Angry Robot right now. You have two books out. The first one is Moxieland. Mm-hmm. The second one is Zoo City. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us a little bit about them? And I'm laughing because I just asked you all this and I feel stupid. But why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about them?
It's all right. It's good for my jet lag. It gives me a sense of deja vu.
Yes, you know, exactly.
So Moxieland, it's about how dependent we are on cell phones. Mm-hmm.
I put my cell phone down.
Absolutely. And how governments can use that to control us. So it's about a corporate apartheid state, which I think very much kind of reflects where we're at right now in terms of economic apartheid, where the divides between rich and poor are just growing bigger and bigger. And I think if you do work for the corporations, even now, I've got a friend who works at Google, and their perks are ridiculous.
They are.
You know, so it is definitely kind of a different kind of a lifestyle. So I was very much playing with that idea. I was playing with kind of cell phones as social control. The worst thing which can happen to you in this society is that you get disconnected from your cell phone, which is what they were threatening to do now in London with the London riots. It's exactly what they did in Libya and Egypt during the riots there and the Arab Spring. So there are definitely some resonances in what's happening today, which is really interesting to see. But it's about four different characters. It's about a trust fund kid blogger who's just kind of messing around and plays alternate reality games in real life. and an AIDS orphan who was raised in a corporate orphanage, and now she's a high-flying corporate, but she thinks she's gaming the system, but actually it's gaming her. It's about a rabid activist who's becoming increasingly violent in his ways of addressing the injustices of the world. And it's about a young artist called Kendra who opts to go for corporate sponsorship, where they literally inject nanotech under her wrist, and it changes it to a brand logo. And then but it also interacts with her with her brain chemistry. So every time she drinks the product, it's a soft drink brand which has sponsored her, called Ghost. So every time she has a can of Ghost, she gets the equivalent of an ecstasy rush. You know, it's interacting with her serotonin and her endorphins, so she's literally addicted to the product.
Did you happen to hear about the guy who got a QR code tattooed on him?
Yeah, I did. It's
And when you said the branding on her, that just reminded me of that.
You know, I wrote the book in 2008, and the number of things, the number of kind of really creepy real-life examples that have happened since then, it's really interesting. Which is not to say I'm an amazing futurist. You know, I was writing about a lot of stuff that was already happening that you could kind of see the germs and the seeds of already.
Sure.
But yeah, so it's kind of a fast-paced political thriller, cyberpunk, with all these kind of characters coming together in this mad scheme. So that was Moxieland, and then Angry Robot signed me up for a two-book deal. I didn't want to do a sequel to Moxieland. I wanted to do something fun and different, and I like to shake things up. So Zoo City the New York Times called it a phantasmagorical noir, and I really like that description. It's an unconventional detective story. It's about a young woman with a sloth on her back and the magical ability to find lost things who gets asked to find a missing pop star, and it all just goes horribly, horribly wrong from there. But it's set in inner city Johannesburg and kind of the tenement slums in that area. I think if you've seen The Wire, you'll probably recognize some similarities. It's, you know, it's people living in desperation and poverty, a lot of refugees. And what has happened in this society, which is an alternate universe to ours. You know, everything is the same, except that around the mid-90s, magic entered the world, and criminals or people who've done terrible things got saddled with a magical animal. And no one knows exactly what they are. They might be, the devil on your shoulder, or your guardian angel, or your spirit totem, or your familiar. Or it might be kind of the lost spirits of the ancestors, which ties into an existing South African belief about Mashavi, which is that sometimes the spirits of the ancestors get lost, and they inhabit an animal, and that animal can kind of follow you around. And it's a curse. It's a very dangerous thing to have. But I think what's so interesting about ancestor worship is that, you know, your ancestors weren't necessarily good people.
Right.
You know, they could have been a criminal or a murderer or just a dick.
You never know.
Yep. And if that is, you know, I never explain the theories completely in the book. I think I was really trying to play with what our real experience of the world is. You know, what happens after we die? I don't know. You don't know. We have theories.
Right.
And I wanted to do the same thing in Zoo City. There are no very, very clear-cut answers, but there are a lot of different theories, and I wanted the reader to bring their own theories in as well.
We kind of talked, when I wasn't recording, a little bit about how...
Are you sure you're recording?
I am. The numbers are moving now. And we talked a little bit about how, in America at least, you know, we haven't been exposed to a lot of South African culture. And I've been thinking ever since, and, you know, we had, like, a little bit in one of the Lethal Weapons movies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I want to say nothing until District 9.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a lot of new authors coming out of South Africa writing science fiction? Is that something that's booming there now?
It is booming, and I think things like District 9 really showed even South Africans that we could explore our world in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And District 9 is a really interesting example because, you know, it's... If it had been set on Mars, it wouldn't have been that interesting. And if it had been about real refugees, which is what it was inspired by, no one would have gone to see it. It would have been critically acclaimed, maybe won an Oscar, but it would have had zero audience.
Right.
And I think that's partly what makes science fiction so exciting, is that you can explore social issues in a very, very interesting way and make it a fun, engaging, entertaining story that gets beyond people's issue fatigue. So that's what I'm seeing with the current crop of new South African genre writing, which is really just starting. You know, it seems to be kind of a very nascent thing, is that there's always an underlying social element. There's always a sly, satirical, subversive dig at the way the world is. And I find that incredibly exciting. So some of the South African authors I'm excited about right now, who have books out right now, are S.L. Gray, who wrote a terrifying horror called The Mole, which is really all about consumerism, and it's just... It's horrible. And that's out in the UK. I think it's going to be released in the US soon. There is Deadlands by Lily Hearn, which is a mother-daughter team working together under a pseudonym. And it's a YA zombie apocalypse. The zombie apocalypse hit during the World Cup soccer.
Wow, the mother-daughter working together to write a book, that's kind of interesting too.
It's really interesting. It actually gets worse. It's more complicated because S.L. Gray is also a pseudonym. S.L. Gray is Sarah Lotz and Louis Greenberg working together. And Lily Hearn is Sarah Lotz and her daughter working together.
Gotcha.
So Sarah Lotz is just the most prolific human being on Earth. But it becomes terribly confusing trying to explain that. So it's S.L. Gray and Lily Hearn.
I've heard of two authors combining under one pseudonym before. So
apparently publishers don't like it if there are two names on a cover. They say it doesn't work. So if you are two authors writing together, you have to do it under a pseudonym. Zombie apocalypse after the World Cup. Again, kind of a sly political edge. And it's about teenagers living in this kind of zombie safe enclave that's safe from the zombies. But there's still all the pressures of being a teenager. And the cool teens go and stage raids on the local mall, which, of course, is incredibly dangerous.
Right.
And then there's Adeline Radloff's Sidekick, which is again a YA about a teenage sidekick to a time-traveling superhero who's very troubled and very Bruce Wayne-y, but in a very troubled and difficult way. And you realize actually how difficult it would be to work with someone who is kind of as bipolar and mood swingy as Bruce Wayne. It would be a nightmare. And she's always got to kind of, you know, try and joke him out of his...
That's why Dick Grayson left.
Exactly. Yeah, completely. So those are some of the really exciting things that are coming out of South Africa at the moment. There's some new upcoming writers, Sam Wilson, Charlie Human. They've got some great stuff coming out. It'll probably be out in the next year or two, but they're definitely writers to watch. Really talented, really exciting. And it's great to be part of that.
Awesome. And you're also part of Angry Robot, obviously. John Anilio wrote the Angry Robot song.
Which I hope you will now play at this moment in the podcast.
Either now or at the end.
All right.
Yes. I'll throw it. And I've also been doing the remixes. They did the remix contest. Some good stuff in the remixes too. Now, your books are available as ebooks, and Angry Robot has a unique ebook program.
Yeah. So Angry Robot, I think, have been one of the most forward-thinking publishers when it comes to their e-strategy in general. They work with bloggers a lot. They've got a very active Twitter and blog profile. But their ebook strategy is just brilliant. They have, from their website, they have ebooks that are sold cheap of all their titles. They're very affordable. They are not locked to a specific territory. So wherever you are in the world, you can actually buy that.
Or to a specific device.
Or to a specific device, absolutely. And there's no DRM. So, you know, which doesn't protect from piracy anyway. It's just a pain in the ass for the consumer.
Right.
So it's really nice to see how open they are to that kind of thing and really strategic. And you know, they're doing the stuff that they know would piss them off. They're trying to avoid the stuff which pisses them off, you know, when they buy ebooks. And I think they've just been very strategic and very clever. And then they also have this subscription model where you can buy all their releases for a year. And people have responded so well to the Angry Robot brand. You know, they do a lot of really interesting cross-genre stuff, and it's a great list to be part of. And a lot of people really trust the brand. So they offer this model where, hey, if you like us, you can buy every book that we bring out in a year, and it'll cost you X amount. You get basically a third off. And it's been doing so well. Apparently, it's the top-selling thing in their ebook store, which is amazing.
No, people really don't like all the DRM. They don't like that, you know, you buy a book here, you can't put it on your phone.
It is ridiculous.
On your computer.
I know, yeah. And people crack it anyway. You know, it's the pirates. I mean, the ordinary consumers don't, because we don't necessarily know how, but the pirates crack it in 30 seconds and still, you know, torrent the book.
Well, there's always been the argument that the laws, that they say don't do this. You know, well, there's... The majority of the people will never do that anyway.
I know.
And you're putting a law up there, and it's not really...
And you're treating your consumers like shit.
Right.
And you're treating them like criminals. You know, it's like that awful anti-piracy commercial at the front of DVDs.
Yes.
You know, like you wouldn't steal a handbag. I don't know if you have that in the States.
Yes.
Do you know what? I only have to watch that ad because I bought the damn DVD. If I'd pirated it, I wouldn't have to watch the stupid ad.
Exactly.
And you can't skip it. It's just, it's so frustrating.
Did you ever see, there was a show on the BBC called The IT Crowd?
Yeah, I love The IT Crowd.
They did a parody of it. Yes, where it was hilarious. Hilarious. They parodied that whole anti-piracy thing.
It was brilliant. And it's interesting because the creator of The IT Crowd is, he's kind of pro-piracy. He's like, listen, you know, I know that I have fans outside the UK, and it's impossible for you guys to watch this stuff. So if you want to download it, that's okay. But then, you know, maybe you'd like to buy the box set afterwards. And I think that's really refreshing.
Monty Python did it.
Exactly.
Monty Python built a YouTube page, and they said, people are going to pirate our stuff no matter what, but what we're going to do is we're going to put it up in really nice, high quality.
Absolutely. And then maybe get some advertising off it.
And then on everyone, there's a link to go buy it.
Absolutely.
If you
exactly.
want to go buy it, go buy it.
And I think that's, you know, I think most people want to buy stuff that they really love, and you just have to make it easy and convenient for them.
Well, you know, and I made this argument once to Lou Anders. I said there was a guy who, when the Star Trek movie came out, he downloaded a torrent of it before it ever went into the theaters, you know, for the general public. Mm. And he watched it, and he bitched about it, but then he went and he saw it on IMAX in 3D, you know, and then he went and saw it again, and he saw it a couple more times. And then when the DVD came out, he bought the Blu-ray, and he bought...
Absolutely.
So what did it really hurt that
totally.
Guy downloaded that?
And, you know, I think there was a recent study which showed that pirates actually buy more stuff than anybody else. Not that I'm saying you should go out and torrent my book. I
right.
prefer you bought it from Angry Robot, where it's really, really, really cheap. Or, you know, torrent it and read it, and if you like it, buy it for a friend.
And the books are?
Zoo City and Moxieland.
Now, you're working on another book right now, but you don't want to talk too much about that because you're still working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? You have some short fiction out there?
I've got some short fiction out there. The one is Unati Battles the Black Hairballs, which is a completely crazy story about a very hip Soweto girl from the townships in Johannesburg who ends up being a mecha captain in Tokyo. And her entire squadron just gets wiped out by these killer black hairballs, and she kind of traces them back to the source. And it involves Takashi Murakami, the artist, and Haruki Murakami, the writer. And it's just my big kind of real kind of Japanese culture, pop culture otaku moment. And it was just really fun. It's completely insane. It's probably my craziest story.
Now,
I'm also doing some comics for Vertigo at the moment.
Oh,
yeah.
I like Vertigo.
Yeah, no, they're great. I think they're my favorite imprint. Like, they really do really, really interesting, exciting
they do.
Stuff.
Yeah, that's where Neil Gaiman's Sandman started.
Exactly. Yep. So I'm doing, and I did an audition comic called All the Pretty Ponies, which is in anthology called Strange Adventures 1, which Vertigo brought out earlier this year. And that was kind of my audition to see if I could crack it. And they obviously liked it because they've asked me to do a 6-part arc of Bill Willingham's Fable series.
Oh, very cool.
So I'm doing the Rapunzel story. And
we've had a couple of the Fable guys on before.
Yeah. So, and it's so exciting because I love Fables, and I really had fun with the character. And Bill has been so generous and so amazing and so supportive. He's been awesome.
Very cool. And why don't you tell people where your website is?
Yeah, it's www.laurenbeukes.com. That's LaurenBeukes.com. My Twitter, where I'm very active, and I will try and tweet you back, is at LaurenBeukes, LaurenBeukes. And yeah, and the only other thing I wanted to mention is that there are official soundtracks to both
yes.
books.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which are done by African Dope, African, D-O-P-E, .co.za. You can get it the American edition didn't come with a discount code. For some reason, it kind of fell off the page. But if you buy a copy of Zoo City in the States and you want to buy the soundtrack, just send me a tweet and ask me for the discount code, and I'll give it to you. And that gives you 50% off the book, and I think then it becomes like, off the album.
And what was the genesis of doing the albums?
You know, I just wanted, I've had a lot of opportunity to do really fun collaborations with people. You know, 3 of the chapters in Zoo City are guest written by writer friends of mine, which is just amazing. It's amazing to see what other minds bring to the process and to this thing that you're so close to and so intimate with that maybe sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees.
Right.
And they come in and they show you that you're not in a forest at all, that you're actually, you know, on the edge of a cliff and you're underwater, and you're like, oh yeah, I totally saw that. And it's really amazing to see what collaboration can bring and what other people can bring to the process and surprise you with their ideas. So I approached African Dope when I'd written Moxieland. They were my favorite record label in Cape Town. And I was like, you know what this book really needs? It needs a soundtrack. Do you guys want to do it? And my local publisher didn't want to pay for it. They weren't interested. They were like, it's not a book. We're not touching it. And African Dope took the full financial responsibility, and they put out an album, and they cleared all the tracks of the artists. But we handpicked every track to make sure that they really, really kind of fit the mood of the book.
That's awesome.
And it was just really fun.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on.
Again.
We do appreciate it. Again, yes. And it totally recorded this time. Everybody should go to your website, check out your books, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Robots plotting the overthrow of robots, lords of Armageddon on his mind. Look him in the eye, he's a heavy robot.
Thanks again to Lauren for coming on. Sorry about the background noise. That was my very first ever remote recording. I don't know that the others should be a little bit better, because I think I actually found quieter spots. We thought we were in a quiet spot when I recorded that. We were off in a little corner. And when we started the second time is when all the panels kind of let out and all these people started walking by, and it ended up being not quite as quiet as we originally thought. Thanks again to Lauren for coming on. Thanks to John and Elio for letting me use that song that he doesn't know that I just put in the podcast yet. Thanks to Angry Robot, obviously. I actually have another interview that I'll put on in like a week or two. Maybe I got to figure out what order I'm going to do these in. But I also have Lee A. Harris, which is, you know, the editor over at Angry Robot, and I get to chat with him. So I've got another Angry Robot podcast for you. Other than that, I think that's it for me. We do want to say congratulations to Jamie Todd Rubin on the birth of his child, second child, I believe. We also want to congratulate Karen Burnham, who is a contributor at SF Signal. She also does the roundtable over at Locus, and she had a little baby boy. So babies all around. Congratulations. If you have any thoughts, questions, suggestions, please call our voicemail line 720-277-9082 or shoot us an email at, I believe it's voicemail at sfsignal.com. There's also a widget on the website on sfsignal.com. When you look at this post, there is a Flash widget, so you do have to have Flash enabled on your browser. And if you use that widget, you can plug in your phone number, and then Google will call you, and you can leave us a voicemail. There's also some things you can do to help us out. Number one, tell your friends about the SF Signal podcast. That will help us boost listenership. You can also go to iTunes and give us a couple stars or write us a review. Those things help to boost us within iTunes and helps to get a little bit more exposure there as well. But telling your friends is huge. You know, obviously, if you can tell some people, and you know, if you enjoy this podcast, then there's a possibility your friends might as well. So we do appreciate that. And you know, check out sfsignal.com. Check out John D on Twitter, twitter.com/sfsignal. He just went to ArmadilloCon, so he hasn't been tweeting this last weekend, but he should be back up and running here soon. I am on Twitter, twitter.com/ATFMB. I am also ATFMB.com. That's the blog. I am playing a little bit with Google Hangouts, but I am not ATFMB there because that didn't work. But I'm around. If you searched my name, you might find me. And I think that's pretty much it. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to go do some other stuff. I will talk to you guys later. Another episode coming up next week. We have a panel, and we'll have an interview for you. So I think that's it. I'm out of here. Bye. Oh, you know what? We should listen to some more of that Angry Robot song. What do you think? Angry Robot, Robot.
Angry Robot, plotting the overthrow of